The Razorback Talk Show designed for smart fans. This is Ruskin and Zach.
We are back. Ruskin and Zach here on Wednesday afternoon. And it's time to check in with Nikki Chavanel, hogbeat.com. Big recruiting notebook on hogbeat.com today with Nikki, and has updated the 2021 big board as well. So we'll talk about that and probably a bunch of other crazy stuff. Nikki, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
How you feeling?
I am much, much better now that I can eat food.
I was a little disappointed you wouldn't come on last week high on medication.
It would have been a mess.
Yeah, that's what we wanted.
I was kind of taking advantage of it, not having to pay attention to every single thing that was happening. So
for those who don't know, Nikki had her wisdom teeth pulled out. How many did you get removed?
All four of them.
Ooh.
That's not good.
Did you go, did you have any complications?
Nope. I was out like a light, and then I cried all the way home. I wasn't like talking funny, but I was crying.
People do like to take videos of people after the after they have their wisdom teeth pulled out, just mumbling and
babbling.
That's
called blackmail.
That is. And I would seriously check your boy's phone, because I'm sure he's got more than one.
I asked Ben to take a picture of me like when I had taken a break crying to send to my mom, but then right as he listened to the phone, I broke out bawling again. So it was just, he was so confused. He didn't know what to do.
What would be the chances that we might be able to get our hands on that photograph?
Hey, I posted one that wasn't, you know, actually bawling on my
Instagram. That's, I don't want the one where you're not. So, I want the one where you are.
So you missed that opportunity. I don't think that one's going to see the light of day.
Well, we did get a picture of Mike Nabors doing mime. So, I mean, we got resources here.
Yeah, I mean, we're willing to work out a trade.
Okay, so to the business now, Nikki, and just on your this piece today on the notebook, just what are some of the broad strokes right now as we get closer to a football season? Guys in the 21 class that they're looking at or committed are going. Just what are some of the big picture things here?
Yeah, so we are, you know, we have 19 2021 commits. It's really 20 if you include Jaquelin Crawford, who's already on campus. So there's only 5 spots left. And that, to get to a full 25, a few players will have to transfer out after the season, which usually isn't a problem. So I kind of, you know, set the total at 25. A few, I'd say one or two of those spots will probably be an offensive lineman. There's still a couple on the board, although a 4-star guy that really, really loves Sam Pittman, Kingsley Suamataya from Utah. He picked Oregon, but he was trending to Oregon for a while. I think, you know, if maybe circumstances were different, Arkansas was in a better spot nationally right now, they might have been a little bit more in that race, but it was good to be in the top 7 at least. And then besides offensive line, like since they got Keychon Jackson, the wide receiver out of Texas last week, they're pretty much done with the offense. And then the defense, you know, there's still some defensive line spots. They're looking at some JUCO players as well who, you know, they aren't playing right now until the spring. So I don't know what they're going to do there. And then there's the defensive backs. And I think there's just maybe like one or two spots there. And MJ Daniels, a 3-star athlete from Mississippi, former Ole Miss commit, he is making a new decision on Friday. The finalists are Mississippi State and Arkansas. And right now it's a real toss-up. Like, it's very unclear who he's going to pick. He's liked a bunch of my, like, Arkansas-related posts on Twitter, but he did just go visit Starkville this past weekend. So I think he doesn't even know where he's going to go, but he wants to announce on Friday. So we'll see how that goes.
A lot of consternation on the show today about who the backup quarterback is. Who's the backup quarterback?
I'm pretty sure it's KJ Jefferson. I think it's always been him. Whether that's, you know, because he really is the best arm out there, maybe he knows the offense better. But I think that's pretty much settled.
We're talking with Nikki Chavanel from Hogbeat.com, part of Rivals here on Ruskin and Zach. How will you measure success this football season?
Well, you know, the stats tell you a lot. Our team's putting up 150, 200 yards in the rushing game against the defense. Like, If not, okay, that's an improvement. You want to see a few wins, especially because there are winnable games this year. Missouri, Mississippi State, Ole Miss maybe even. Those are some winnable games. And then you want to see competitive games against, you know, the rest of the league. But you still expect a few blowouts. You expect much better quarterback play. There's when you're 2-10 2 years in a row, there's so many different ways to get better success. I don't know. That's just so tough to say with, you know, an all SEC schedule. But, you got to win at least one game. Like, that to me is the bare minimum.
I hate the word breakout player, but who are we sort of undervaluing on the defensive side of the ball? That's a good football player that's probably going to have a year where everybody goes, okay, this guy stepped up in 2020.
You know, Joe Fouché, I think he had a pretty bad year last year. It just didn't seem like he was taking the right angles on things, didn't seem like he was in the right position to make plays, but it seems like he's made a lot of progress. Not that we've gotten to see him that much, but the coaches seem to think that. So I want to see him, you know, make a lot of progress, and he could be that guy. But then also Monteric Brown, I mean, obviously he's a starter, so it's not like nobody knows about him, but I think he's just poised to have a really great year as a junior, and be a leader of that defense.
We're talking with Nicky Chavanel from Hogbeat here on Ruskin and Zach. I feel like we've talked about this earlier. I feel like Dalton Wagner kind of gave the rallying cry for the whole state. Like, someone finally said how everybody is feeling yesterday when he said that they're sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know what I mean?
Yeah. After those seasons, that'll definitely happen. And it felt like very, you know, heartfelt and meaningful. But at the end of the day, what really spoke to me, and we've been hearing it from all these other players as well, is that they're just working harder. They're saying they're working harder than they've ever worked before. It makes you wonder what was going on before. but, like, the scrimmages have been harder than they've ever had before. Like, all this stuff that just seems like they're being developed at a level that they haven't been the last 2 years. So that is more positive to me than, you know, just like, oh, we're tired of it. Yeah, well, we're all tired of it. The difference is going to be, can you play better?
I saw you lamenting on Twitter earlier, the two deep. When do you expect to see a depth chart?
Well, they usually release it the Monday, you know, before game week. And usually the first one has, like, quite a few oars mixed in there. Don't want to hurt too many people's feelings. But we'll see with the situation right now. Like, usually they give us the media notes on that Monday press conference, but since everything's virtual, who knows when they could release it, whenever they feel like, I guess.
You got to print your own media notes.
Yeah. I mean, we have a pretty good 2-deep, I think. You can go look that up on hogbeat.com. And they've been pretty good about telling us, you know, who's working with the twos and stuff like that. But there are positions that are fluid. So finally seeing who's won the battle at, you know, right tackle, that kind of thing, is exciting for us.
I feel like, getting back to something we were talking about a minute ago, Nicky, I feel like this may sound weird, but it's not about the win total this year, but you do need some wins. Like, you can't, we understand, I think everybody understands, they're not winning 7, but I don't think you can win 0 either, and that'd be okay. You know, like, this year won't be defined, I don't think, by wins in terms of success or failure, but you do need one or two, I think, to keep people kind of plugged in.
Yeah, like, not like the Missouri, you know, rivalry is much more rivalry, but, like, will you finally beat Missouri? Like, that is a team that doesn't have better talent than you do. So it's just about playing hard and having your scheme set and all that kind of stuff. So, like, there are very, you know, winnable, competitive games on the schedule. I think, you know, seeing them compete will be great, but they do need to, you know, win a game or two. Just, you know, because the casual fan, they don't pay attention to, like, the small improvements. They care about the record.
Right. Exactly.
You are what you say, your record says you are. And at the end, look, you can be competitive in every game and say you made progress, and that's probably true. But you know as well as I do from message boards, if they go 0-10, folks aren't going to be happy.
That's true.
Yeah, I think, you know, Arkansas fans are tired of being the butt of jokes. And if the if the record remains the same, then that just continues because other fans aren't paying attention to improvement either. So, like, you can't say, well, Felipe Franks is a lot better. It just doesn't matter if your record stays abysmally bad.
It's like nobody's looking for great here, but get to respectability first. Like, quit losing every game by 30. Let's start there. And then if you go 1-9, but you have 6 losses by 10 points or less, well, I mean, yeah, you're 1-9, but you feel better about next year than being 1-9 with, you know, 9 losses by 40 points every week. It's a different feeling going in the offseason. And if that one is later in the year as opposed to earlier in the year, that's even more of a different feeling going into the offseason.
Don't have any not top 10 plays this year.
Like, right. Stop making the not top 10.
That's right.
That's progress.
That goes into respectability. Like, get to respectability first and work your way up from there. The other thing, too, and this ties into all of this, and you know this well, Nikki, is they've got to keep the momentum going recruiting. And if you go 0-10, I think you lose some of your recruiting momentum in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, everything's is going well for Arkansas. They've gotten a lot of recruits, a lot who haven't even seen the campus. But you do worry about flips. If the record and the play just doesn't live up to their expectations right now, it really looks like everyone's solid. All the schools that would normally be coming in trying to take guys away, like, they're pretty much full at this point. So they're in a really strong position. But if you play really bad, that can change some people's minds.
So, is Texas State that good, or is SMU just suck?
Oh.
Hey, it is the first game of the season.
Yeah, against Texas State. This is a school that was created out of a movie. I mean, they were the Armadillos, now they're the whatever they are.
They're Bobcats.
Bobcats.
I understand, but as you know, any team has the capability of playing down to their opponent.
Oh, my gosh.
Any team has the ability to play
Morris,
poorly any given Saturday night.
You just don't roll into San Marcos and expect to win. That is a house of horrors, man.
No, a tough away environment for them.
Right, right. In front of dozens and of people.
Spread out. That's right.
Yeah, equally spread out so there is no noise.
That's right.
You got the one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and they hung around with you?
Yeah, the defense worried me. Secondary worried me, but we still got Shane. Still got Reggie Robertson. Still got some pieces.
That offense was on point, though.
I'm so upset the TCU game is canceled.
Yeah.
Or postponed for now, but I'm going to keep watching those guys.
All right. Nikki Chavanel, hogbeat.com, part of Rivals, with everything you need to know as training camp continues. Thank you, Nikki.
Thanks, guys.
Nikki and all our guests join us on the Williams Tractor Hotline.
It's time to get ugly.
You're listening to Ruskin and Zach.
I still hate when that plays before a guest.
Why?
I don't know. I don't want to upset anybody. Although, if we ever get Tony Barnhart in here, I'll make sure it plays before.
I don't think Tony Barnhart's coming on.
No.
He was pretty adamant about don't ever call me again.
Well, I think he swore at you.
He did.
That's too bad. All right. 26 till the hour here on Ruskin and Zach on the radio in Northwest Arkansas on ESPN 99.5. Around the state on ESPN Arkansas and streaming on hitthatline.com. Dudley Dawson is with us now, Hogs Illustrated and WholeHogSports.com. Hi, Dudley.
How are y'all doing?
We're doing great. What did you read between the tea leaves on what Coach Pittman had to say about this scrimmage on Friday?
Well, I think that wanted the offense to be a little bit better, but I think he's also a defensive coach, even though he's offensive line coach. And he talked a little bit also about how he would be worried if in both scrimmages that the offense dominated both and the defense dominated both. So it's one of those things that, I'm sure that both of them had plays, and I'm sure that both of them still have a ways to go. And I think we know that regardless of whether we get to see them go up against each other or not.
You've been doing this longer than most of us, and when you hear, in a back channel way, sure
you did.
When you're listening to Sam Pittman or you're listening to the players or the coach, how much of what they're saying is coach or player speak, and how percentage wise, how much of it's actual truth, and how much of it is just coach speak?
I'm going to go 75% coach speak during the preseason. Once you get to the season, I think it gets a little bit better, you know, because everybody, they don't have the opportunity to just talk about what they want to. They have to talk about what everybody sees, whether it be on TV or in the stands or whatever. But yes, during preseason, I take hardly anything to be the absolute truth. And, you know, I think that's not exclusive to here. It's just all over the place. It's the way coaches have been. I remember back in the day when coaches told you what they thought about put it in fashion that you'd know for sure. But that went away somewhere, I think, maybe in the
90s. Well, it went away when the entirety of a coach's press conference was televised or streamed or wherever. You know, there used to be those kind of like, well, when I started covering the team, Nutt was the coach. And, you know, Nutt would do the press gaggle, and then writers like yourself and Nate would walk back with him to the Broyles Center, and you'd get more stuff. And that doesn't happen anymore.
Right. It used to be, I think, what they call a gaggle now politically when you're around a candidate. But yeah, the internet changed a lot of things, and sports and the way it got delivered from coaches to fans as well.
No. So if 75% of what they say is just caca, what do you make of Sam Pittman saying, well, defense is really good on during the scrimmage?
He wanted to make I'm sure they hit a lot of very nice plays during the scrimmage, and he wanted to make them feel better after them not feeling very good after the first one, because everybody and their dog apparently got a touchdown pass during that first scrimmage. So, you know, again, I think it is coach speak, but sometimes you talk to the team via the media, and you talk to them via the other ways that you have available. And I do know that while I think Coach Pittman and his staff are very forthcoming and very open to telling us, you know, a lot of different things, they don't want us to know jack what's going on in practice.
We're talking with Dudley Dawson here on Ruskin and Zach. I don't know how much college football you got to watch this weekend, Dudley, but
watch everything I can get my eyes on.
There you go. So did seeing how those games played out with the limited prep time and everything, did that change or influence what you think we're going to see on the 26th with Arkansas or with any of these SEC teams?
Well, boy, there wasn't very much competitive except maybe Texas State and SMU.
Right.
Just like last night, Navy was, you know, I know they've talked about not personal distancing, but they were trying to personal distance during that football game.
That's right.
You know, it didn't work out well for them. I think that we are going to see a lot of mistakes from a lot of teams early on because they've been kind of, you know, reduced time that they've been able to be physical, and you're just going to see guys who are not ready to be hit and guys who are not ready to hit. So I think we're going to continue to see a lot of big plays because of that. Now, that is an issue here at this university. As you know, the last few years, big plays have not been few and far between. They've been, Arkansas has been up there in the number of 20-yard plays given up over the course of the season. So I think that's still going to be the case here. And you know, in Arkansas' situation, you're playing great football teams just about every week. So, you know, early on, I suspect there to be some miscues, but I think as the season goes along, not only here at Arkansas, but around college football, we'll see it looking more like we would have thought if COVID had not come around.
I feel like I'm walking under a ladder saying this, but recruiting is going really well. They got a young man last week out of Roy City, Texas, a 4-star wide receiver. And then on top of that, you get Lucas Coley going off in his first game of the season last week.
Yeah. Keetron Jackson is the young man that you're talking about that committed last week. He's their highest recruit so far, and he bumped them up to basically number 21 in the cumulative rankings of the guys who go out and do this. And if you are 8 of your last 36, 4 of your last 24, that is phenomenal to me that you're at 2021 right now. And especially during when the time you didn't have a lot of time to get these guys on campus. I think there's 7 of the 19 or so that actually have been here to campus, but they've done a really good job. And I tell you what, I hear Justin Steph, I hear Kendall Browse, I hear, Coach Odom, and I hear Pittman, you know, at the forefront of this thing. And I think it's been a really good thing for Coach Pittman that he kept Justin Steph around, because he got both of the top receivers they've got coming in, and he's doing yeoman's work. Plus, he was able to, you know, have some type of continuity, because you need to know who you need to know, you know, around the community, I guess.
We're talking with Dudley Dawson here on Ruskin and Zach. Well, what is it that would convince someone like that? Is it the vision? Is it the I've seen different kids have committed to talk about the communication, that it's you know, it's not constant, but they are have a definite presence when they're trying to recruit somebody. What do you think is the kind of secret ingredient here?
Well, I think there are three main things in regards to this class right here. Number one is the relationship that the coaches, and whether it be the four that I just mentioned, or Ryan Rhodes, the linebacker coach who came from junior college, or any of the other guys on the staff. This was a staff put together not only for its coaching ability, but its ability to bring in, land and develop players. So I think that's a big key. Number two, just be honest about this. There are plenty of positions here where kids on this list, recruiting list, see that they can come in and play right away. Keetron Jackson made that very clear when he committed. They told him he was number one on their list. He believed them, and he knows that Mike Woods is you know, going to be junior, and that the receiving core is one that he can come and get with right away. So that's another thing. And then the third thing, I think, and really it's going to have to give them credit, because when you cannot be in a kid's house, when you cannot be at his school, and they weren't able to do this, they have done a wonderful job at virtually showing off this university, at virtually showing off the football program. And let's be honest, that's harder than it looks when, you know, I went through all the stats a bit while ago. So they have done a really good job adapting to the new COVID-type recruiting they've had to do. Remember, they got in a junior day in February, got in one in March, and then everything shut down. And the only contact they've had is via Zoom or FaceTime, however else they're doing all these things. And they somehow, taking all those numbers that I said, have been able to get themselves in position to be 21st. And I believe that's like 7th in the SEC. You know how this works. But still, it would be very easy to be 50th. You know, and be 14th or 12th or 14th in the SEC. But, you know, in a place that hadn't been given much hope lately, I think this should give people hope that Arkansas won't lose games because of coaching, and that they're going to be bringing better players in, and they're going to be better developed than they have, let's go, the past 4 years.
19 total commits, only 4 on the offensive defensive line. You concerned?
No, because I'm sure he's going to get a few more in there, and also I wouldn't be surprised at all in the end if somebody who's starting somewhere else right now ends up being here next year and starting here when it comes to offense line. He's got a great reputation of that, and they'll massage that thing to where they want it to be. You know, the three that they do have are solid, and I think they're going to have some more in there. I think they know how to work the math maybe a little bit better than the previous coach and staff.
Well, he's a math guy. I don't know how that's possible.
Well,
that's, you know, what we were sold anyway.
Hey, there's a math on a sheet of paper and there's math on a football.
That's
field.
True. Do you have a Terry Lambert update?
I gave him a John Oliver or both at Navarro, I think. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go.
Navarro. There you go. Dudley Dawson with us. We'd be not doing our jobs if we didn't have one of the biggest Cardinal fans we know and didn't ask you about Lou Brock passing away over the weekend.
Yeah, just a tremendous baseball player, someone I grew up with watching and idolized. But also I had the opportunity probably about 5 different times, whether it be in spring practice, at different things, to just spend some time with him. And he's just a great man as well. Also, you know, just a gentle guy, and you told him you were from Arkansas. He talked your head off, and just to, you know, I hate that he had to suffer late with so many problems, including having his leg amputated and things like that. But just a great gentleman and a hell of a baseball player, obviously.
Now he's from Arkansas, correct?
Yeah, Eldorado, right, okay, is where he was born, and then he moved over into Louisiana and grew up you know, was raised there, but he's always claimed Arkansas.
People today don't understand what the, I mean, the game in the 70s, the 60s and 70s, much different than it is today, which is just batting practice, you know, trying to hit the ball over the wall. I mean, this was a guy that was literally a five-tool player.
Yes, had 24 leadoff home runs, just, you know, had 3,000 hits. And obviously, you tell somebody right now that he had 118 stolen bases in one season, they think, well, that was that the team? No, they used to do it like that. You know, he used to steal bases, and then the Cardinals, Vince Coleman, Willie McGee, and a lot of others. You know, Mari Wills, a lot of others. Stolen base used to be a much bigger thing than it is these days.
Absolutely. And some of the stuff that I was listening to and reading was, you know, you can be a great player and, you know, the fans will love you. But the fans, like Lou Brock really loved the fans as well. Like that, that's not usual for the star athlete in any sport, really.
Yeah, that's true. And he was, you know, as I was saying, I go to spring training a lot. He was one of those guys that would just spend time with everybody down there, even though, you know, whether he was coaching or just mentoring or whatever they call it after you get down there. He just spent a lot of time with fans, and he seemed like he really enjoyed it instead of it being a job for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Phil Elson that tweeted this out earlier. I mean, we lost Tom Seaver last week. We lose Lou Brock on Sunday. Seaver faced Lou Brock more than any other player in his career. I mean, it's just kind of a weird symbiotic number.
Yeah, and both of those guys, and I think that the thing that we know they were Hall of Famers, we know they're great baseball players, but I think the day's players would be, you know, would be smart for them to emulate some of the older players in the way they went about talking and visiting with fans and doing that.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Dudley, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Dudley Dawson with us, Hogs Illustrated, WholeHogSports.com here on Ruskin and Zach.
The Razorback Talk Show designed for smart fans.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
We're glad you're here on the radio in Northwest Arkansas on ESPN 99.5, around the state on ESPN Arkansas, and streaming on Hit That Line. .com. Neil McCready is with us now on the hotline, rebelgrove.com. Give us some insight on what's going on with Ole Miss training camp. Of course, they open up hosting Florida in a couple weeks. Good afternoon, Neil. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. How's everything up there?
Great. We're doing great. Appreciate the time. So give us some of the broad strokes, the big storylines thus far with Ole Miss training camp.
Well, it's been pretty interesting because we have not seen anything. I've been jealous of some of the stuff I've seen from there and some other places where people have had some access. We've had absolutely none. But the big story is probably quarterback, where it looks like Matt Corral's won the job. And it's going to be him under center when they play Florida, as you mentioned, in a couple of weeks. And then, of course, it's you know, like it is up there. It's a new coaching staff and a new head coach, and so that's a big part of the story as well. And then Ole Miss got some good news earlier this week. Sam Williams, who probably is their best defensive player, certainly was their best defensive player from a year ago, came back, had been out due to a sexual battery arrest. Those charges were, I guess they were dismissed, I guess is the proper term, late last week, and the university readmitted him early this week, and so he's been back with them since I guess Monday. So from a football standpoint, that's really good news for that defense, because they didn't have a whole lot of playmakers behind him at that position.
Lane Kiffin, obviously a huge splash when he's hired, and how has he sort of played with the crowd there in Mississippi? I know that, you know, there was a little dust up when he dropped the mayor of Oxford's kid and signed somebody else. But I mean, other than that, I mean, how has he played with the rebel crowd?
I don't know. It's a good question. You know, the pandemic hit and he went back to Florida, and then he went to California. He really wasn't here very much. Gosh, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. And then, you know, when the players reported in June, he started coming a little bit, and then in July when they could work out with them, he's been here since. And you know, it's you know, I don't really know how it is up there, but you know, here it's still pretty locked down in a lot of ways, so there's no activities and that kind of thing, so he really hasn't had a lot of interaction with the fan base.
Yeah, Well, here, Coach Pittman did his radio show last night at a local place where they do the radio show every year. And it was, you know, as many people as they could allow in there spread out. And he was behind plexiglass and everything. So he was there, but that's the first. I mean, there was no Razorback Club circuit this offseason or anything like that. So that's probably the first time he was in front of the fans in yet, I guess.
Yeah, the first time he stepped out.
Yeah, it's just such a weird. It all the dynamics. I mean, here, there, Mississippi State, everywhere. It's just so strange right now. So, I mean, you know, so many legitimate answers to questions is I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be like, you know, at Ole Miss. I mean, I think they can put 25% in the stadium for that Florida games. That means about 16,000 ish. But, and I think they'll probably end up getting there. But there's a lot of fans that are out there that, you know, mainly because of financial reasons, they're going to just say, hey, I'm going to defer my tickets until next season, or I'm going to ask for my money back. And, you know, I just think the environment's going to be so completely different than anything we're all used to.
The Mississippi was sort of the center of the college football universe in the spring with Kylan Hill and getting the flag change there. I want to ask you a little bit about sort of the dynamic between Mississippi and Mississippi State with Mike Leach down the road in Starkville. I mean, Mississippi has really got, I mean, two elite coaches who are going to bring these programs along.
Yeah, I mean, like I've said many times, I think we kind of got cheated out of what would have been a really fun spring to watch with these two guys stepping into those programs. You know, certainly high-profile guys. Mike Leach has had a ton of success at Texas Tech and then at Washington State. He takes over a Mississippi State program that is sort of the Texas Tech of the SEC, the Washington State of the SEC. It makes some sense. And yet it's a complete far cry from, you know, what that program has kind of always been, which is, you know, sort of blue-collar and put it on the ground and run at you. And that's not his style of football. So it was going to be interesting to see how that worked. And then, obviously, Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss was going to be a big story in the course of the spring. And then the interaction between the two of them, because they're friends. And they're funny around each other, and they interact with one another. And, you know, but we saw a little bit of their interaction at the Capitol when the coaches from both schools went and lobbied, you know, to have the flag changed and that kind of thing. But we didn't get the football part of it. We didn't get media days, for example. We didn't get some of the stuff that would have happened perhaps had there been junior days and all of those things and spring games and stuff. And so, you know, all of that stuff's been sort of put on hold, and I guess we'll start to see it to some degree this year. But it's a different dynamic than what I would have thought it would have been, you know, in say, January when Mississippi State hired Mike Leach, and you thought, man, it's going to be a little crazy here because the rivalry's been nasty the last few years. You know, the two programs don't like each other. The two schools don't really like each other. The fans don't like each other. And over the last several years, the coaches haven't liked each other that much. And these two guys aren't from Mississippi. They don't have ties to the two schools. They don't have ties to the rivalry that, you know, that predate them getting the jobs. And I think the rivalry has a chance to become a little kinder, gentler rivalry, certainly between those two, because I don't think they're going to take it that personally.
We're talking with Neil McCready, RebelGrove.com, with us here on Ruskin and Zach. So where we are, Neil, everybody is just fascinated, and really this is every training camp here, but they're fascinated. They're gaga over what the offense is going to look like. I've been trying to tell people, look, if they score 40, but they give up 45, it's not going to matter. What is there something there in Oxford where the thing that maybe everybody's focusing on, but the actual most important part to having any kind of success this year with that team would be, well, what's the concern?
Yeah, it's very similar. You know, I mean, people get giddy about quarterbacks, and Ole Miss certainly has some talented running backs, and there's a freshman that they've added to the mix that they're super excited about. Elijah Moore, you know, all the fake dog pee aside, is a hell of a wide receiver, and they've got some, you know, they've got some really good players. They brought in a tight end from Temple, Kenny Yeboah, who they're excited about, and they're pretty good up front if they can stay healthy. And so people get excited about offense, and you're like, you do realize that after you have the ball, the way this works is the other team gets it. That's kind of how football has worked, at least, you know, pre-pandemic, that's how it worked. Maybe it's changed, I don't know. But Ole Miss has the same questions on defense, and specifically it's, you know, do you have enough up front to slow anybody down? Do you have to be perfect on offense to be competitive? And look, I've covered this league for longer than I'd like to admit, and I've covered multiple teams in this league. And if you're not good up front on defense, your margin for error is super thin, and that's Ole Miss's problem. I just don't know that they can line up defensively and sort of handle it against a team in the SEC that's solid up front, that can run the football, that has some balance. And I think we just described most of the SEC. And so it's difficult for me to find a bunch of wins, and fans lose their minds. They say, what do you think? I'm like, I don't know, 3 wins, maybe 4 wins. And they're like, oh, you don't think they can win 7 games? I'm like, with what, on defense? And so, yeah, I think all fan bases are this way, guys. It's just hope springs eternal, and in the preseason, you're undefeated, and you're scrimmaging against each other, and everybody looks good, and everybody's bigger and faster and stronger and all of that stuff. And then the season comes around, and for both Arkansas and Ole Miss, I mean, they get a giant test each that first day. I mean, with Georgia and up there and Florida here, I've just got to have – I got a little feeling that for both places it's going to be a little sobering, especially when you look at the defensive side of the ball.
When you look around the SEC and you look at all these new coaches, I mean, you got Drinkwitz on the east side, you've got the, you know, Leach and Kiffin and Sam Pittman. Looking at the coaching, I guess the coaching tree here, I mean, this may be one of, if not the strongest collection of coaches, minus Derek Mason, maybe in the country in any league. I mean, it's going to be hard to win games.
It's really hard. That's what Ole Miss plays at Kentucky in week 2, and a lot of Ole Miss fans are like, okay, that's a W. And I'm like, wait, what? I mean, they've been winning. I mean, Stoops has done a hell of a job in Lexington. He's turned them into a very steady program. That's not a free W for anybody, that, with the possible exception, I guess, of, you know, an Alabama or a Georgia or whatever. But then you look at LSU and the season they just had. And I know they lose a lot. I get it. And everybody circles it and goes, see, look, that could be one. And it's like, man, they are stacked with talent still on that roster. Yeah, they lost a lot, and they're not going to be as good as they were a year ago, certainly, but they're still going to be really good. And it's just a stacked league. Everybody's committed to it, with the exception of Vanderbilt. And there's just not many freebies, and even the programs that were really bad a year ago, the two that we've covered that were not particularly good a year ago, they've gone out and made the kind of hires that have fans excited and have recruits looking at them and that kind of thing. And I don't anticipate that, you know, programs like Ole Miss and Arkansas and Mississippi State are going to be down for long. I really don't. But the problem is, for them to get wins, you've got to get them against other SEC teams. And you just look around at the programs that are on the rise. Tennessee is better. You know, Florida is better. Kentucky, we just talked about. You know, I guess South Carolina is vulnerable. LSU, Alabama, Auburn's good. Texas A&M seems to be improving, and they have a solid coach in Jimbo. So it's just a tough league. There's no gimmies.
Talking with Neil McCready from RebelGrove.com here on Ruskin and Zach. And these two schools are interesting because Arkansas fans feel like they should sweep the Mississippi schools every year. That should be minimum. And I'm sure Ole Miss feels like they should never lose to Arkansas every single year. You know?
Yeah, I mean, never's a big word, but let's be real here. I mean, when you're in the same division with Alabama, which is one of the two or three premier programs in the country right now, that's not debatable. And, you know, you just saw what LSU just did, and you know what Auburn is typically, and you know what Texas A&M is certainly trying to be, and they absolutely have the resources to be. I mean, you don't have to do a lot of math. If you're Arkansas and you're going to be competitive in the West, you have to beat Ole Miss and Mississippi State. And if you're Ole Miss and you want to be competitive in the West, you've got to beat Arkansas and Mississippi State. The state says the same thing about Ole Miss and Arkansas. It's just fact. Those become pecking order games that before you can get to fourth, you have to get to fifth. And before, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, I mean, Ole Miss and State and Arkansas can all kid themselves, but it's all an uphill climb. I do think you can win at those places. I mean, it's not that Arkansas is not that far removed from, you know, a pretty special season with Bobby Petrino before that all went south. And Ole Miss is the same, you know, same spot with Hugh Freeze. And, you know, Mississippi State, what was that, 2015 in the middle of November? Mm-hmm. They were undefeated, ranked number one in the country before the, you know, They lost a couple there at the end to Alabama and Ole Miss, but they were 10-0, and they were ranked number one, and, you know, they were undefeated, and they did play in an Access Bowl. Ole Miss played in back-to-back Access Bowls. You can get it done at those programs, but you have to be really efficient, and you can't afford the sort of nightmare scenarios that Arkansas had with Petrino, that Ole Miss had with Freeze. Those can't happen. You don't recover as quickly as you can at an Alabama or an LSU or an Auburn.
We've talked about if Arkansas went 0-10, could they still be a better team than they were a year ago? What's the number of wins that Ole Miss fans would expect in year one under Lane Kiffin, where they're not squirming in their seats going, did we make a mistake?
I don't think there is one. It's a one-off season. They didn't have spring. I'm sure that if you talk to Sam, put truth serum in his veins, he would tell you that's a big deal for a first-year coach. First-year coaching staff, from an installation standpoint, from a getting-to-know-your-player standpoint, just sort of a getting a feel for a program standpoint. I know he's been there before, and he's been in the league and all of those things, but still. I'm sure Mike Leach would tell you the same thing. Kiffin hasn't budged from it. I mean, he's not using it as an excuse, but he said, do I wish we had spring? Sure. Do I wish we had a normal summer? Absolutely. Because I think Ole Miss would have probably dived into the transfer market a little more than it did had they had a spring to truly evaluate some things. They didn't have that. So to answer your question, look, what do fans expect? Fans expect wins, and they bitch and moan when they don't get them. But from was a mistake made? I think I contend for all four of the new coaches in the league. This goes from year one to year zero. This is just kind of you want to win and you want to be competitive. But anybody that judges, Sam Pittman at Arkansas or Mike Leach at Mississippi State based on what happens on this season, I just don't think you're being particularly fair.
Neil McCready, RebelGrove.com, with us here on Ruskin and Zach. I'm sure we'll catch up when these two teams get together later on in the year. Neil, thanks so much for the time today.
Absolutely, guys. You'll take care.
All right. Neil and all our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline here on Ruskin and Zach.
You think it, they say it. This is Ruskin and Zach.
All right, we're back here on Ruskin and Zach. Happy to have you with us. 26 minutes till 5 on Friday. Headed into a full football weekend. You got the Zach's going to try out the red zone on Sunday, potentially.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I hear it. I've never tried. I don't know. Well, I'm going to give it an honest shot.
Okay. Taking advantage of the free preview before you pull the trigger on that. That's the whole point of the free preview, so that's good. It does get a little crazy if they go quad box, if they've got four games up at once, because teams are driving towards the red zone or in the red zone four at a time. That can get a little hairy, That can get a little wild, but that's rare. The quad box is the unicorn of the red zone experience. It's like Halley's Comet. Every few weeks they may do that, but not very often. So, all right. We are ready to go, and we're going to check in now with Travis Brown from the Eagle and Brian and College Station, MyAggieNation.com. Get a little preview of Texas A&M. Travis, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing great. Appreciate the time today. So, what have you learned experiencing a training camp that really, I guess, the coaches and I don't know if any players have spoken to the media yet, but I would assume, like most of the league except Arkansas, you haven't really seen anything with your own eyes yet of training camp.
Yeah, I was about to say experience the training camp is kind of an interesting way to put it this year because we haven't really gotten to experience a whole lot. Normally it's still decently minimum. We go in usually the first 15 minutes of practice when there's not a pandemic and kind of watch them stretch and do individuals. So you can only glean from that as much as you possibly can. But yeah, everything's been over Zoom interviews with the players and coaches. Without seeing it with your own eyes, you don't exactly know, what 100% is going on, but Jimbo Fisher has come across to us as being really, really pretty pleased with everything. And then he said Kellen Mond has had a great fall camp so far. He said that Anaya Smith, some of the skill players, have had a great camp so far. So you don't know. Sometimes when you get to talk to these coaches like we do normally in fall camp, just minutes after practice ends, you get a little bit better feel, because they could still be frustrated, or they could still be, you know, mad about something. We're talking to them at 1 o'clock, so they don't necessarily have that leftover immediacy from practice. But from every indication that we've got, everyone seems to be pretty happy with how things are going through fall camp so far.
This was one of the youngest teams in the country last year, and you couple that with a brutal schedule last year. They struggled at times, but this was kind of the year that they've been pointing to. All the youth has now matured. The schedule is not much easier, but it has lightened up a little bit. There's no Clemson on the schedule this year. How much pressure is on Jimbo Fisher this year to produce?
Well, you know, okay, if you take this in a normal non-pandemic time, I think this was their year. This was the year that everyone had kind of rested on what happened the last 2 years, knowing that, hey, 2020 is going to be the year. But that was with a schedule that had Colorado, with a schedule that had Abilene Christian and North Texas and Fresno State. For as much as they knew that Fisher was getting his guys in and that this was going to be the first season that a lot of these guys were veterans, it also leaned pretty heavily on the fact that the schedule is lined up really well for them. Now, at Tennessee and Florida, not lined up quite as well as necessarily they would have thought, but that's not necessarily impossible. The other interesting thing to think about is what necessarily is expectations this year. I mean, it sounds like with every indication that the college football playoff is going to go on, even if it is only three conferences, but they don't necessarily... We haven't got a necessarily 100% confirmation on that. So, I mean, win some games, you know, win all the games that you're supposed to win this year. Is that a good place to start? I think that every coach this year, including Jimbo Fisher, is probably going to get a little bit of a pass as long as they win the games that they're supposed to win this year, because no one really knows what this season means right now, if that makes any sense at all.
No, it totally makes sense. We're talking with Travis Brown from MyAggieNation.com and the Eagle down there in Bryan and College Station, Texas. I enjoy the December shuffling of the deck chairs in college football with all the different coaching stuff. And this December, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. We know we got one opening already down at Southern Miss, but I mean, is normalcy going to return to the point where a team gets so excited about or so disappointed about losing three or four games in the month of November and into December that they would pull the trigger on somebody? Nobody knows.
I think it goes back to the games that most fans know that you're supposed to win. If Jimbo Fisher this year, their losses are Alabama, Florida, and maybe Auburn, although Auburn is really the biggest swing game of the season, I think. But if they lose to Florida, Alabama, that probably puts them, if in a normal case scenario, out of contention for a New Year's Six Bowl, maybe. So in a normal season, you might be going to the Citrus Bowl or the Outback Bowl. That's mediocre, but I think in this season, it's probably okay. You know, and again, you know, Jimbo Fisher isn't going to be on the hot seat or anything like that. And I think you'll see around the country more that you're not going to have some of those hair trigger decisions on pulling the trigger on a coach because of a season, just because there's a lot to deal with, and not to mention the economics of it all. I mean, A&M is, you know, one of the top two richest programs in the country. Again, not to say that, you know, Jimbo Fisher is 100% safe, but a lot of those schools around the country just aren't necessarily going to have the money to have one of those buyouts or bring in a new coach. Or it's just going to be a really weird couple of years until things kind of settle back into normalcy.
So where's A&M's place in the SEC, the SEC West? It feels like it's Alabama, LSU, Auburn, draw a line. There's A&M, draw a line, and then there's everybody else. Am I just misreading that? Or, I mean, are they ready to make that jump into that Alabama, LSU, Auburn group?
I think if you look at the national conversation, of course, I think A&M is that kind of dark horse. They're that swing school that could shock a lot of people and finish really high, or they could kind of keep it the same A&M marching step and be that it's an 8-5 type season, you know, however that translates to 10 games. Here's the thing. Here's the interesting thing, though. I've always, and I'll argue that LSU maybe doesn't necessarily belong in that top category anymore with everything that they lost, not to mention the players opting out, not to mention losing both Joe Brady and Dave Aranda, who are two really huge parts of that. I mean, it's easy to see Burrow and Hilaire and all those players that left, not to mention Jamar Chase that opted out. But a lot of what happened there was the genius of Joe Brady and Dave Aranda, two guys that are gone. I mean, if A&M lives up to its potential, it could be the Alabama A&M up there at the top tier in the West. Auburn, you know, Auburn is always going to be a swing game for A&M because A&M and Auburn always, that's always going to be a close matchup, no matter what really the records are, it seems like. So, yeah, I mean, A&M could 100% solidify themselves up there as running with Alabama. And the interesting thing is A&M plays Alabama week two. So if A&M, you know, lives up to everything it's supposed to be and finishes second in the West, that second week game could be for a lot of the marbles in the West.
Definitely. That's a big one. Week two, as you said, down in Tuscaloosa. We're talking with Travis Brown from the Eagle there in College Station, MyAggieNation.com, here on Ruskin and Zach. And you know this very well, and it pains Razorback fans to be reminded of this here in Arkansas, Travis. But ever since A&M has joined the league, Arkansas has not been able to beat those guys. The games, there have been some close ones. There have been some nail-biters late, but Arkansas has not been able to get over that hump. And now this year, of course, the game will be in College Station this year, not in Jerry World as it usually is.
Yeah, man, I'm pretty excited to see how that. I mean, by every indication, it's going to be a little home and home before they wrap up that contract with in Jerry World. And you know, Ross Bjork down here has said that he wants to make sure that series goes back to the home campuses. And as soon as that contract is over, and I'm sure Arkansas would potentially like to see the same kind of thing. I'm curious to see. You know, it didn't matter what the records were between those two schools or what the coaching staff or what was going on. That game was going to be a one possession, maybe overtime game every single time, and really exciting to watch. Curious to see how much that neutral site getting amped up to play in AT&T Stadium and how that worked out played into necessarily a little bit of that rivalry and how maybe home and home might affect how hard that game is played or how close that game is. I could see with it being the getting the home field advantage, sure that could be finally be one that A&M kind of runs away with it. But then take into account next year going up to Fayetteville, that's a whole other ball game too. So that's one of the ones I've circled to see how moving that to a home and home changes that dynamic that's always made for whether each team likes it or not, a pretty exciting game.
Travis, there isn't a lot of quarterback star power in the league this year. Burrow's gone, too, is gone. Is Kellen Mond the guy? I mean, is he the best quarterback in the SEC?
It'll be interesting. You have Florida's Trust down there who's pretty good. I think he has the most longevity in the lead. Oh, and Mississippi State has the transfer as
Costello.
Well. Costello. That could really separate themselves by the end of the year, but at least preseason, yeah, he's the one that has the most name recognition in the league. I know a lot of people around A&M are not necessarily big Kellen Mond fans and say that he hasn't necessarily proved much. I argue with the fact that in his entire time here, he really hasn't had much of an offensive line. So if they want to place to develop beyond 10 yards or read option run plays or things like that, their pass blocking has just not been good. And more times than not, he's taken some shots that all of us have been surprised that he's popped up from and played. I think that if that offensive line can make some strides, which is a big ask coming off a season with no or an off season with no spring practice, a truncated summer practice, if they can make strides forward to be better, I think that people will see a Kellen Mond that, you know, isn't going to be in probably in line for any of Davey O'Brien awards. but is a quarterback that will win games. And I think in the SEC, at least as of now, you can win championships in the SEC without a quarterback that is getting himself put onto Heisman watch list, as long as he's a good game manager, doesn't turn the ball over, and wins you ball games. And I think that's exactly what Kellen Mond can be.
Travis Brown, MyAggieNation.com, covering Texas A&M there. Well, it's a couple weeks away from the season. A&M opens at home against Vanderbilt, and then the big one, week two, in Tuscaloosa against the Tide. Travis, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You got it. Anytime, guys.
All right, Travis and all our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach.